I mean,
some of the scenes you will witness may appear to border on fantasy.
I can game it in a big way.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Gracious. But,
I mean, tonight,
we care, and it shows.
The law.
You will listen and obey.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Monarchy. This is the first episode and actually my first time behind the mic, so you have to bear with me here while I'm in the studio. I want to thank Jeff and everybody who probably doesn't know me here at PRA. Really glad they gave me the shot to do this. I pitched the idea to do a news show, sent them my blog, and they were excited, and I'm excited to be here and to be able to do this for you. Maybe a little bit about myself. My name's James. Like I said, the show is Media Monarchy. I'm basically going to be using my news webpage as my script for this show every week, Friday mornings at 10 o'clock. And you can go to mediamonarchy.blogspot.com, and you can find all the news that we're going to cover here right there for you. A little bit of background. I moved to Portland just under a year ago. I think my one-year anniversary will be coming up here in about a week or so. So I'm excited to be here and be on the air. Moved here from a little town in West Virginia called Shepherdstown. And for over 5 years, and I actually worked there for 10 years, I helped run a non-commercial radio station there in Shepherdstown. 950 watts. It was the radio station under Shepherd University. And I was the music director there and a DJ and programmer and just all-around instructor, cheerleader, workhorse. I'm really glad that I'm here doing this for you, and I hope that you're going to be interested and receptive to what we're going to be going over. It's not about left, and it's not about right. There is a conspiracy to take away our rights. And it's not about George Bush. It's not about Bill Clinton. It's not about Hillary Clinton. They're all working for the same gang. It's not as simple as voting in the Democrats next week, because they ain't going to help you. It's just two management teams fighting for position of Slavery Incorporated. Now, we'll go ahead and jump into it. I got a lot of stuff, a lot of news, a lot of clips, a lot of interviews, a lot of things to hit up. Top story, what's on the webpage right now?
5 years later, we get Back to the Future. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's episode 237 from MediaMonarchy.com. And it's our fifth anniversary. It's October 28th, 2011, and you just heard the first few minutes of episode one from October 27th, 2006, as this show began and has always been on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. Revereradio.net, I think, picked us up around episode 20, so a huge, huge thanks to them. They have always carried this show, no problems. Love you guys and appreciate it. ZeroPointRadio.com picked us up. I believe it's going on 2 years, and they get us simulcast on the web, and they also get us terrestrially in Casper, Wyoming. So a huge thanks to them, and a huge thanks to all the folks, all the alternative media outlets, everybody out there over the past 5 years who have helped spread the word about this humble little show. So I think you can tell by that clip, it was a decidedly low-key affair there in the early episodes, and now it's a jam-packed episode, and I think hopefully we do it in an energetic way that gets people excited about what's going on and about being informed. It's the greatest show on earth, ladies and gentlemen. Like I said, formally, and there's never any way to do anything like this justice when you're a one-man band. There's not much time to look back. We have to constantly keep moving forward and constantly step up our game. But for the record, my name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. And this is the fifth anniversary, episode 237. It's October 28th, 2011. And again, praradio.org, zeropointradio.com, revereradio.net. Our archives are available on radioforall.net and archive.org. And we are, of course, on FaceSpace, Twitter, Tube, Tumblr, Gmail, Skype, all with Media Monarchy as your username or keyword. We cracked the 1,000 mark on our Facebook page, so a huge thanks to all those folks. And again, that's just one other portal to try and share this kind of information. And as always, a huge thanks to the community at tragedyandhope.com. Now, as we always do on these shows for quite some time, we keep a Google News window open so we can see what's going on in the world up to the moment. And we see 18 minutes ago from USA Today, police hunt gunman in Greenville, South Carolina, schools locked down, shots fired at officer in South Carolina, 10 Greenville schools locked down for manhunt. Meanwhile, girls given equal rights to the British throne. Stocks turn mixed after big Thursday rally. And of course, there's all the World Series Jockorama celebrity garbage that you can handle. So we'll see how this story and so many others develop. Something fascinating, I think, and again, to say how listening to that clip shows how it was a modest affair earlier on Media Monarchy. I'll provide these links in the show notes, and on that episode, as I went through it, we go over about 14 stories. And I would hazard a guess that nowadays on Media Monarchy, we probably go over hundreds of stories, if only reading the headlines into the record and laying out the path and hopefully giving some kind of context, subtext, text to learn our way forward. But the articles we went over on our very first episode, more allegations from EPA whistleblower. That's the very first story on the very first episode of Media Monarchy from Raw Story. An EPA whistleblower long argued that her agency failed to issue proper warnings about air quality at the World Trade Center disaster site. German troops in skull photos controversy. The CIA's travel agent, Boeing and Jeppesen and other front companies with kidnapping and torture. Oregon group to screen 9/11 documentary. Olbermann on GOP fear-mongering, and Pelosi gives neocons get-out-of-jail card. And as we heard myself on that clip, voting in the Democrats next week isn't going to save you. That was coming up of that supposedly pivotal 2006 election. Ex-CIA and Marine intel officer says 9/11 was an inside job. That is Robert Steele, ex-CIA agent, discussing Webster Tarpley's book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror. Blair quizzed on Bilderberg, chemical warfare, and phosphorus shells. And the Simpsons pitch their tent in anti-war camp. It was a Halloween episode where they did a sort of alien invasion episode a la War of the Worlds, but it was ultimately about the Iraq invasion. After Pat's Birthday, a piece written by Kevin Tillman, Pat Tillman's brother, the murdered soldier. Remains found at WTC, Con Ed found body remains in manholes. State Department's official misinformation when it comes to 9/11, Venezuela, Osama, and more. Publishers are so screwed. Ad revenue is down, New York Times, Chicago Sun-Times, McClatchy, and more. Judge orders Cheney visitor logs open. And finally, again from Keith Olbermann, your words are lies, sir. So that episode contains, I believe, two clips from Keith Olbermann, where we do point out, before we play any of them, that the role he was playing was that of pressure release, the steam valve. So the populace doesn't explode. You know, let them think they're winning from time to time and give them front people on controlled corporate media that act like they're on your side. And I think all those stories kind of show from the very beginning we've tried to stay true with the kind of topics that we cover, from war crimes to media and memes and Simpsons and so many other things that I think are fundamental to this show, and I hopefully make this show what it is. And again, a huge thanks to all the folks out there who make doing this show worth it. So let's jump to the present. The most recent episode of my weekly video series with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com is called The New World Next Week, and it's at NewWorldNextWeek.com. Episode 89, published yesterday, World Peace, British Heat, and God's Banksters. And we will get to these stories in this episode 237, but just quickly, studies show the world has never been this peaceful in a background video on the Panopticon system. At least 2,700 a year die in freezing homes in the UK in a background video on geoengineering and killing off the useless eaters. And story three was Vatican calls for new global financial authority amid economic crisis with some background videos on Empire of the City, or the Ring of Power documentary, massive sprawling documentary. And also getting into God's Banker and Roberto Calvi and the Vatican, the P2 Masonic Lodge, and the Mafia. And as some of the comments, I believe, on the video note, I think it goes for that as well as anything else from Media Monarchy, that just because we link to things doesn't equal endorsement. And I think most folks out there have the discernment to figure that out. But the latest episode and all the other fantastic nonstop alternative media coming from CorbettReport.com posted all along under episode 205. This one surprised me pleasantly. Inside the Film Archive. Episode 205 opens the vaults of thefilmarchive.org, a vast treasure trove of archival footage on everything from old documentaries to CIA training films to educational cartoons to Duke Ellington performances and so very much more. An awesome episode, and there's the interview with Eric Dion, the mastermind behind thefilmarchive.org, to go along with that episode, and all the other latest and greatest audios and videos from CorbettReport.com. Occupy Vancouver answers the question, where does money come from? And Fukushima updates for October 23rd through the 27th, coming from the brand new FukushimaUpdate.com. Meanwhile, the CIA and the nuclear black market, that is the preview for the latest eye-opener from BoilingFrogsPost.com. Bush in British Columbia, Canada hosts a war criminal. And Libya shattered as per the NATO plan as Gaddafi's family seeks justice at The Hague. And I believe that is James Corbett appearing on Russia Today. Some of the other latest interviews, in addition to the aforementioned Eric Dion of thefilmarchive.org, is Bob Chapman, Splitting the Sky, and the 400th interview from CorbettReport.com, Paul K. Chappell. And we put all our amazing alternative media together, all the friends and folks that we're so blessed to be involved with in trying to share information and ideas. It's Ghost Week with my man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. He is on 3 hours a night in Portland, Oregon on KXL 101.1 FM, 9 to midnight. They are on Twitter, at Clyde Lewis, at KXL News, and I provide the listen live links as well as the podcast subscription. And we post up all the latest articles and now videos from Ground Zero TV. Running down the list, Evil Clown Evil, The Return of Cthulhu, When Black Eyes Speak, An Exorcism, The Prize Possession, and The Night Visitors, Unleashing the Kraken, Aliens in Brazil, and even, yes, Eric Roberts. Actor Eric Roberts was on GroundZeroMedia.org on this past week. And I think we mentioned them before. We will mention them again. They are coming up this weekend, as it is, my friends, Halloween weekend, as we're looking down the barrel of so many things going on in our occultural landscape. Ground Zero presents The Ghosts of John Wayne Gacy on October 30th and Phone Calls to the Dead on October 31st. GroundZeroMedia.org, Exorcism, Night Visitors, and so much more. And again, each week we always like to post up the alternative media, some from some of our favorite friends that we are proud enough to be connected to in some way, shape, or form. And again, a huge hat tip and hats off to all of those folks, because I can't do this without them doing that. It's fascinating. It's mixed signals, mixed emotions. Because we look around, we can obviously see it seems as though things are falling apart at an alarming rate. Whether that's economically or spiritually or mentally or emotionally or physically, as we see bridges collapsing around the world. From overseas to the District of Criminals, our very core infrastructures collapsing by design. But there's been such an amazing barrage over the past week of overwhelmingly positive news. So you get these mixed messages, and that's what gives you that, ooh, that feeling in your stomach. That's cognitive dissonance. How can I hold these two? I can't. The last of the U.S.'s most powerful nuclear bombs dismantled in Texas. From Reuters, the last of a powerful class of nuclear weapons introduced into the U.S. arsenal at the height of the Cold War in 1962 was being dismantled this past Tuesday at a nuclear weapons storage facility outside Amarillo, Texas. This was one of the largest bombs in the American arsenal, said Joshua McConaughey, Public Affairs Director for the Department of Energy's National Nuclear Security Administration. He said the exact strength of the bomb, known as the B-53, and being dismantled at the DOE's BNW Pantex facility. The exact strength of the bomb remains classified, but it is believed to have been many hundreds of times more powerful than the atomic bomb that destroyed Hiroshima in 1945. And you can get more information from Pantex.com. And we also have links to the Washington Post and the NNSA, the National Nuclear Security Administration. USA Today does ask the question if this B-53 bomb dismantlement is a victory or a sideshow. And even our related updates are positive. Posted below this story about dismantling our most powerful Cold War era bombs is a story that we saw break last week while we were doing episode 236 live, but here it is put onto the record on MediaMonarchy.com from CNN. Obama says Iraq war over by year's end. Troops coming home. Mission accomplished as Obama announces full troop withdrawal.
I pledge to bring the war in Iraq to a responsible end, for the sake of our national security and to strengthen American leadership around the world. After taking office, I announced a new strategy that would end our combat mission in Iraq and remove all of our troops by the end of 2011. As Commander-in-Chief, ensuring the success of the strategy has been one of my highest national security priorities. Last year, I announced the end to our combat mission in Iraq. And to date, we've removed more than 100,000 troops. Iraqis have taken full responsibility for their country's security. A few hours ago, I spoke with Iraqi Prime Minister Maliki. I reaffirmed that the United States keeps its commitments. He spoke of the determination of the Iraqi people to forge their own future. We are in full agreement about how to move forward. So, today, I can report that, as promised, the rest of our troops in Iraq will come home by the end of the year. After nearly 9 years, America's war in Iraq will be over. Over the next 2 months, our troops in Iraq, tens of thousands of them, will pack up their gear and board convoys for the journey home. The last American soldier will cross the border out of Iraq with their heads held high, proud of their success, and knowing that the American people stand united in our support for our troops. That is how America's military efforts in Iraq will end. But even as we mark this important milestone, we're also moving into a new phase in the relationship between the United States and Iraq. As of January 1st, and in keeping with our strategic framework agreement with Iraq, it will be a normal relationship between sovereign nations, an equal partnership based on mutual interests and mutual respect.
Obamasiah has declared the Iraq war is coming to an end, all the troops coming home. And in other fantastic, great news, Inspector General says $6.6 billion in lost Iraq cash accounted for now. It's a rare day when positive news surfaces from the front lines of Iraq's post-occupation government or from its troubled economy. However, a U.S.-Iraq Inspector General report that concluded this week that $6.6 billion in shrink-wrapped cash the United States government previously feared had gone missing in the chaotic days of the Iraq occupation has in fact been safely accounted for. Quote, the mystery of the $6 billion that seemed to go missing in the early days of the Iraq war has been resolved, according to a new report, end quote, CNN national security producer Charles Keyes reported Wednesday. New evidence shows most of that money, $6.6 billion, did not go astray in that chaotic period, but ended up where it was supposed to be, under the control of the Iraqi government, according to a report from the Office of the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction, or SIGR, S-I-G-I-R. Stuart Bowen, the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction, had previously testified that as much as $6.6 billion of the $10 billion the United States shipped to Iraq had disappeared due to, quote, weaknesses in the Department of Defense's financial and management controls, end quote, Keyes wrote, citing the bureaucrates from a previous SIGR report. It's been found. The Iraq war is over. The missing money has been found. The bombs are being dismantled. Yes, we can? Our first story on the latest New World Next Week episode 89, studies show the world has never been this peaceful. And from the Associated Press, I read this on that episode, so I will neglect doing the same thing over again, only to say that these three main writers and researchers, you can find more about them on the Council on Foreign Relations website as well as the United Nations. The better angels of our nature, why violence has declined, winning the war on war, and the Human Security Report all show that violent crime is down. And our discussion on the New World Next Week gets into the possibility of intelligence, the panopticon system, the eugenics agenda. This is what we see. They're telling us the war is over. They're telling us the bombs are dismantled. Meanwhile, we see massive preparations all around the world for collapse. They seem to be preparing for something. Whether that comes from inner space or outer space remains to be seen. But I had someone close to me just yesterday, and it's someone that I've been talking to about these matters for years now, and they said they feel as though they can see it now. That it all kind of presented itself, and they suddenly saw and said, oh my God. That's what we've been trying to do. That's been the mission all along, is to make people look at the information finally and discern and say, oh my God. But then the next move is the big question. What are you going to do? I think sometimes the question for me, or at least the one that's maybe easier to answer, is what am I not going to do? So in some bizarre ways, we're celebrating this fifth anniversary episode, and we have all of what, you know, just on face value is amazingly fantastic news. And if we didn't know what we know from doing this show for 5 years, we would find some solace in all of those stories. But we know it's the window dressing. We know it's the show. We know it's the shadows on the wall. And we do have so very much new, important news that we're going to get over and get to. But as long as we're sort of celebrating and perhaps having somewhat self-indulgent moments here on my fifth anniversary, I posted something to the page on Monday about my favorite band. They're called Sloan. They're from Canada. And NPR, a couple weekends ago on Weekend Edition, did a nice story on them. I've played a bunch of their music on this show throughout the years. And you may recall this summer when their new record came out, we played some tracks and I talked about going to see them. It's their 20th anniversary. I first turned them on 120 minutes on MTV. I saw their first video, Underwhelmed, and went to Camelot Music and bought the tape, and I've been a fan ever since. 20 years later, they've always been the little band that could. And I think my favorite artists are those that try and always maintain a degree of independence and the integrity to always do what they want to do regardless of the prevailing winds. Auteurs, perhaps. I think that's why I like Orson Welles and Woody Allen and Morrissey and others. But in this case, Sloan. And yeah, this is Media Monarchy. I don't think I'm taking some kind of huge indulgence or divergence from what we do here. We talk about new, exciting, alternative media, and that's what we're going to do with Sloan and how to make a band last 20 years.
Sheer has witnessed the 20th anniversary of monumental albums by both Pearl Jam and Nirvana, as well as the beginnings of the feminist punk movement known as Riot Girl. R.E.M. and Metallica released the biggest albums of their careers in 1991, and it's also the 20th anniversary of the Canadian band Sloan. Who? Jacob Gans has their story.
Four guys, 10 albums, 20 years. The unlikely story of the band Sloan starts in Halifax, Nova Scotia, a college city in eastern Canada's maritime provinces where four young musicians, Jay Ferguson, Chris Murphy, Patrick Pentland, and Andrew Scott, met and started playing together. Here's guitarist Jay Ferguson.
We played our very first show at the Nova Scotia College of Art and Design in Halifax, Nova Scotia, February 1991. We played in the cafeteria.
It didn't take long for Sloan to bust out of the cafeteria. About a year after that first show, it attracted the attention of an A&R rep from the David Geffen Company, the label that just months earlier had put out Nirvana's game-changing Nevermind. Todd Sullivan says he first heard the band while visiting a colleague in Toronto.
He played me some things. He said, you know, there's really kind of this little mini buzz on this band from Halifax called Sloan. And he played me one song, and I believe it was off a radio compilation, and it was the song Underwhelmed.
She was underwhelmed, if that's a word. I know it's not, because I looked it up. That's one of the skills that my school.
And immediately I just said, I gotta have more. Send me more. Can you get me more?
I was overwhelmed.
couple of months later, Sullivan met the band and signed it to Geffen. Again, Jay Ferguson.
It was very exciting and shocking that a band from Halifax, Nova Scotia, which bands never came there and bands never ever got out of that city, to get signed to such a large label.
Sloan already had its first album in the can, and the band was ready to go with a unique calling card. The four musicians are all songwriters who each sing their own songs. Former Geffen rep Todd Sullivan.
There's Chris, who writes these amazing pop hooks, but he's a very wordy kind of writer.
And your glasses, his glasses. When you remove them, I would rather skip my glasses and be caught than to entertain the thought that someday you'll just put them on again.
You've got Andrew, who's very conceptual in his presentation of his songs.
Where is my camera? This picture denies all my ties to this side of the road.
And Jay, he's like the super music fan, and a lot of where he's coming from is about his relationship with music. And then you've got Patrick, who grew up on punk and heavy metal, but writes these great universal pop hooks.
I gotta know what you're seeking. I gotta know where you're keeping. Cause it's causing a major reaction and driving me to distraction. You've got a way of making me feel it safer. I don't think that you do it on purpose, but I've gotta know, I've gotta.
But that calling card was also, in its label's eyes, Sloan's biggest liability.
Basically, if you've got four singers, you're screwed.
Guitarist Patrick Pentland.
What they want is Robert Plant or the dude from Matchbox 20 or whatever. They want a guy to promote, and then they want people backing him up. But it doesn't work with four people singing. It's really hard for a label to promote that.
Sloan didn't make it easier on Geffen by taking a hard turn away from guitar feedback toward cleanly recorded acoustic pop on his second record.
But you got a thing for me. I can feel it, and I've got a thing for you too. You can have it, you can have it.
Twice Removed flopped when it was released in 1994, but would later become a serious fan favorite. Nevertheless, the process soured Sloan's relationship with its label and broke the band up for a time. Drummer Andrew Scott.
This is a creative, collaborative affair, which is pretty thin ice at times. Four monsters that all have equal time.
To that end, there are rules. Each album has all four members on the cover. In concert, nobody plays more than one consecutive song, except Scott, who comes out from behind the drum kit to play a mini set on guitar. All of the money is split equally, no matter who writes what, and everybody gets the same amount of real estate on each record. Bassist Chris Murphy.
That means that there could be songs on the records that any one of us or three of us don't like, but that's a testament to our democracy.
And as in any democracy, there are lots of different ways of getting things done. Sloan has released albums of straight-ahead power pop and 70s-influenced hard rock. Their 10th studio release and their latest, The Double Cross, came out this year with 12 songs, three per singer. A decade and a half after they were dumped by their label, after they split up, Sloan now hums along under the radar, with all four of its original members, collecting a small number of devoted fans who know all of the songs by heart. And not despite the band's rocky start, but because of it.
I've often said if we'd made it huge for our first or second record, we'd be over by now.
That's Patrick Pentland, but all four members say this. Not making it big saved Sloan. Here's Andrew Scott.
It's what we signed up to do 20 years ago, and we've been fortunate enough to continue to make a living off it. It's not a grand living by any stretch of the imagination, but it's good.
Seems like time's a Guinness. Lost his mount to the winners. Another steady dose of awful TV shows. Crowning brand new has been us. If I seem delighted, I have to get you to check my pulse. The feels low down to the ground, and now my money's gone. As I've been paying for some better results, life goes on and on.
We've
made a lot of money off Sloan if you spread it out all over time. If we made all the money we made in 20 years in 1 year, I guess we could have done it like that and then lived forever on our riches and not played together. But I'm glad we spread our millions over 20 years because it's been fun the whole time.
Chris Murphy might be joking about the millions, but the fun? Not many democracies can say that. For NPR News, I'm Jacob Gantz.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
Sloan and how to make a band last 20 years. And again, that's, I think, the kind of art that I look up to. We posted our related media memes below this story about Sloan, and I saw this in the New York Times. It was on the front page, below the fold. Playing the new Bjork album and playing along with apps. Bjork's Biophilia, an album as a game. This article from Seth Schiesel. Since Thomas Edison invented the phonograph, there's only been one way to listen to recorded music. Listen to it. That is, to consume passively, a precise sequence of sounds exactly as they've been arranged. But what if, in addition to songs, a musician provided intuitive, creative tools that let you control the basic components of the music itself? What if the musician joined with programmers and visual artists to turn the songs into encompassing interactive experiences? What if listeners were to become participants? That is what Bjork has accomplished with her latest conception, Biophilia, among the most creative, innovative, and important new projects in popular culture. Biophilia essentially turns an album into a sort of audiovisual game, delivering a miniature production studio into the world's willing hands. That doesn't mean I like the music very much. The article goes on and describes this experience that I believe is probably best, I think, as they say, on the iPad experienced. But that essentially kind of echoes my own sentiments about Bjork. She is fantastic and one of the most forward-thinking, innovative, mind-blowing artists of the contemporary era. That doesn't mean I like the music very much. An update from the Washington Post. Amy Winehouse's death ruled alcohol poisoning. Essentially drank herself to death, like so many others. Meanwhile, Loretta Lynn, diagnosed with pneumonia, cancels tour dates. Netflix subscriber loss worse than forecast. Shares plunge. And you can get more of that on Twitter at @NavigateNetflix. And our final related media meme update posted below the Sloan 20 years story goes to twitter.com/MediaMonarchy. Ever wondered about Snoop Dogg's stance on vaccines, wireless chips, and government drug tracking? Well, it's Double G News Network, GGN, Episode 12, with the Not Safe for Work Kids conspiracy theories.
What up, though? It's your boy Nemo Hoes coming back at you on the Double G News Network. Don't touch the dizzle. We'll be right back with some more exciting news from your hood to my hood. You dig?
I was raised in the hood. I was raised in the hood.
Fuck that. I'm not getting no flu shots because it's flu season. Nigga, I'm going to take some motherfucking lemons, some honey, some oranges. Nigga, grandma got the remedy. Nigga, go holler at your grandma, nigga. Or holler at somebody old in your family, nigga. You don't need that shot, nigga. They shooting some shit in your ass. I'm cool. I don't want none of that. I'm straight. I think they shooting some control in you. Some shit to take control of you. You know, when they have your mind, body, and soul, you know, slow you down a bit. I don't trust them. I'm cool. They sell shit over the counter that you should be able to buy that can handle that. Get you some Theraflu, nigga. Or some NyQuil. That shit look cool to a nigga. Nigga have a blue light in his ear with the piece. He talking professional. He ain't got to hold the phone. He think he about something, you know. You know, the white man showed us the shit first. He was the first nigga that did it. Put his shit in his ear and started talking like he was, you know. So the nigga duplicated. We wanted to be like that. But to me, somebody told me something that was real heavy. Somebody went overseas in the 70s. A famous musician that I know. I'm not going to say their name. But they was in Japan. And technology in Japan is always 5 years faster than America. So in Japan, motherfuckers was creating that cell phone when America wasn't on no cell phone back then. And they was happened to be in a meeting, and one of the creators of the cell phone said, in 20 years, we're going to be able to have this big cell phone condensed into a piece this small where we'll be able to put it in your ear, and we'll be able to, if we wanted to, we'll be able to blow up 100 million people's heads at one time if we wanted to. And when I heard that, I was like, wow, fuck that. I don't want no earpieces. I don't want none of that shit. Even when I go do a special engagement and I might perform, they might want to give me an earpiece. Like if I do, what show did I do? American Idol. They want to put an earpiece in a nigga like Janet Jackson and all that bullshit. I don't do all that. My ears are delicate. And I know y'all going to blow a nigga head up once y'all get it in my ear. That's a conspiracy theory that I believe is true. Take them earpieces out. Talk to a motherfucker on the speakerphone so you can hear and see what they say. If another nigga say the world going in, who was the last dumb motherfucker said the world was going in? That old shriveled up motherfucker on TV talking about the world was going in and the shit still happened the next day. Niggas was partying and drinking and barbecuing and all kind of shit, playing spades. Who was this nigga? What I think is, the world ain't gonna never end, because that's what it was here to do. They keep revolving. When they show the nigga the globe, right? They show the nigga the globe for a reason. The globe revolves like this. So will the world revolve like this. You can kill a fly, the motherfucking next day another one be flying around in front of your head. You can kill a nigga, another day another nigga in your head. You know what I'm talking about? That's just how it is. Lions kill deers, boom, deers show up again. This is how it is. Sharks eat fish, still a school of fish. You know what I'm saying? It's just whales eat seals, it's still a whole bunch of seals. It's gonna keep evolving, man. I know what the fuck I'm talking about. I should have been a history teacher. I honestly believe that the government did put crack in the ghettos and the communities, because I was one who sold crack and dibbled and dabbled around with it, and it just fell out the sky. It wasn't just like it was something that just we grew it or we, you knew how to make it from scratch. It was given to us. And when it was given to us, we passed it on to our homies. If it was an older homie who knew how to do it, he passed it down to a couple of his homies. And it was just a situation where we never stopped to think, like, why is it here and how did it even get here? But most definitely, I believe it was designed and planted by the government, because they were so hard on it once we got a hold of it and mastered it. But if you notice, powder cocaine still is not a felony compared to crack cocaine. You know, we got some celebrities. I ain't gonna say these white bitches' names, but these motherfuckers always get caught with powder cocaine, riding on the freeway the wrong way, sniffing coke, doing all kind of retarded shit. Then you have a motherfucking nigga from the hood who get caught with a 5-piece rock, and you give him his third strike. You know what I'm saying? I don't understand that. So that's why I say this definitely designed to break down the ghetto. That's why it was planted in the ghetto.
Church, preach, tabernacle.
All right, already the show goes on night. All morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they would see the sun? Just remember when it come up, the show goes on. Up off your path, I don't switch up, I just laugh. Put my kicks up on they dress, unaffected by they threats. Then get busy on they ass, see that's how that shut down is.
your hands up. When times is hard, you stand up. L.U.P. the man, cause a brand that the fans trust. So even if they ban us, they'll never slow my plans up.
I'm ready to show.
There. Three in the air for the kids in the ghetto. Four for the kids that don't want to be there. None for the niggas trying to hold them back. Five in the air for the teachers not scared to tell those kids that's living in the ghetto that the niggas holding back that the world is theirs. Yeah, yeah, the world is yours. I was once that little boy, terrified of the world. Now I'm on a world tour. I will give up everything, even start a world war. For these ghetto girls and boys I'm rapping around the world for. Africa to New York, Haiti then I detour. Oakland out to Oakland, Gaza Strip to Detroit. Say hip-hop only destroy. Tell them, look at me, boy. I hope your son don't have a gun and never be a D-boy.
All right, all right, so go long, long night.
You into, no matter what you see when you look outside your window. Brown grass or green grass, picket fence or barbed wire, never ever put them down. You just lift your arms higher, raise them till your arms tired. Let them know you dare, that you struggling, surviving, that you gon' persevere. Yeah, ain't nobody leaving, nobody going home. Even if they turn the lights out, the show is going on.
All right, all right,
that is the Hood Internet mashup of Lupe Fiasco's The Show Goes On and Handsome Furs Serve the People. And what I love about the Hood Internet and Girl Talk, I think the best of the mashup artists, is that the essential MO is taking pop and hip-hop lyrics and putting it over indie alternative classic rock music, which makes for an amazing combination. Because admittedly, the music in a lot of pop, hip-hop, sucks. And that's the amazing thing about that mashup right there, is when you add that keyboard from the Handsome Furs under The Show Goes On, it adds that extra melodic element, and it elevates it a level and adds a whole other kind of emotional feeling to the song. But I digress, my friends. The Show Goes On. That's the name of the 1027 News Purge on MediaMonarchy.com. We're going to blast through the news and begin, as we have not done in the last several weeks. I guess we kind of blew ourselves out on anything related to the official conspiracy theory of the events of 9/11. But here are a few more updates for the end of October. The 9/11 Consensus Panel, this is from globalresearch.ca, the best evidence indicates flaws in the official 9/11 narrative. BNA.com reports on attorneys who filed 9/11 conspiracy suit are sanctioned for pressing frivolous appeal. And this concerns April Gallup. Our last couple of notes get into the world of media and pop culture. Homeland, a new Showtime show, examines paranoia in post-9/11 America. And the SOP.org asks the question, are zombies the guilty conscience of post-9/11 America? Discussing zombies in horror films and the body snatcher style films from the Cold War era and Godzilla and their relation to nuclear nightmares and all of those things. Are those related to our current era, post-9/11? Guilty conscience, the paranoia, the contagion. as we move to our BioWars and ViroHealth updates. The New York Times, a massive piece from their Sunday magazine that's going to run this Sunday. How ready are we for bioterrorism? Like I said, this is a pages and pages and pages long story from Will S. Hilton. Well, how ready are we? How to test the anthrax vaccine in children. That's from ABC News. Singularity Hub reports major study says no link between cell phones and cancer. So again, Iraq war is over. The bombs are dismantled. It's an era of peace. Cell phones don't cause cancer. But then we see from naturalnews.com, millions of tons of Fukushima debris expected to soon wash up on Hawaii beaches and our own western United States coastline. Last BioWars note from the Intel Hub, Japanese journalist accuses Israel of Fukushima sabotage. And this, again, gets back to the story we've danced around over these last several months of the U.S. real involvement in the creation of Stuxnet and the speculative involvement of Stuxnet in the nuclear nightmare at Fukushima. Our drug war updates. Reports say U.S. infiltrating Mexican drug cartels. That is from CBS. Meanwhile, All Headline News notes that Mexicans are complaining about the secret U.S. infiltration of Mexican drug cartels. But a great one from wickedlocal.com. This is out of Hanover. It's an op-ed, and it notes that the drug war begins in the bathroom. And that's the answer on so many levels. Like MJ said, you got to look at the man in the mirror. Are we going to occupy ourselves? What's the crap that's in your bathroom that you're using that stinks and is petrochemical and is garbage? What about the pharmaceuticals in the medicine cabinet? The real drug war begins in the bathroom. Our Econo crash notes, gold up as EU deal sinks the dollar. That is from Reuters. Dollar shaky after pummeling. Italy debt sale eyed, cheers and skepticism greet this EU deal, boosting markets despite lingering questions. That's from the Wall Street Journal. Meanwhile, France to unveil new austerity measures. And back here in our own USSA, the super committee deficit deal still far apart. That is from Politico. Remember, the super committee was originally referred to as the super Congress, but that was a little too telling a title for it, and it was morphed into the super committee debt committee. And finally, former Goldman Sachs director surrenders over involvement in the biggest insider trading scandal. From the Daily Mail and the New York Times, with Gupta's arrest, the insider inquiry goes beyond Wall Street. So again, on another note, see, we're cracking down on these fat cats. We are investigating them. Our geopolitics and a few updates on the fall of Gaddafi. From Reuters and The Guardian, Gaddafi buried in secret desert grave, left unmarked to avoid creating a shrine. A shrine to a 42-year, sometimes thorn in the side, but still a connected player on the grand chessboard, on the geopolitical scene, and another ignominious end. Beaten and dragged through the streets and sodomized and more. But it seemed as though more questions were asked about the death of Gaddafi than were asked about the death of bin Laden. A flashback note to when all of this was happening now several months ago. Before the U.S.-NATO invasion, Libya had the highest human development index, the lowest infant mortality rate, the highest life expectancy rate in all of Africa. And is that what happens when you have leaders who don't play ball with the international banksters? So I'm no huge fan of Chavez or Gaddafi or any of those. But you see what happens when you don't play ball with gangsters. And we provide the flashback to our story just last week. Gaddafi reportedly killed as Western-backed liberation continues. Our final geopolitical note from the intelhub.com, U.S. Syrian relations devolve further as ambassadors are pulled out. And again, the geopolitical scene is dangerous, to say the very least. And we are in a very dangerous time with a confluence of drills and exercises and itchy trigger fingers. And somehow it always seems to align with the stars, if you will, with high occult holidays, which takes us to our murder and mayhem updates as the end of the American dream gets into the dark side of Halloween, the kind of stuff that real life nightmares are made of as we see our world devolving. And as we'll see in these few murder and mayhem notes. From Arizona, mom awarded nearly $1.4 million in baby decapitation case. From ABC News, body of woman missing since 1983, possibly found in freezer. And from CNN, body of woman found hanged at mansion, exhumed. This concerns the Medicis CEO, pharmaceutical firm. The kid got hurt, went into the hospital. The wife, or the girlfriend, is mysteriously hung and dead in the mansion. The boy dies then in the hospital. Or was perhaps she bumped off as revenge for letting the kid die. But we see her body's been exhumed and it will be examined by renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Cyril Wecht in Pennsylvania. He has heavily involvement in JFK case. On what level, and I think you mean it, we don't spend too much time speculating about who's good and who's bad. We try and present information. I'm not going to spend a bunch of time necessarily damaging someone, saying, oh, they're an agent, just because some of the things may be suspect or not. As in all of these cases, investigate this all for yourself. Our last murder and mayhem note, man thought to be John Wayne Gacy victim found alive in Florida. Isn't it fascinating as we see these things swirling around? We've reported on the reopening of Gacy victim cases, trying to ID new victims, and now we now see the discovery of one who's not a victim at all, who's living in Florida for decades. This is some of the stuff that Clyde Lewis has been getting into and is going to dabble with further as they get into the ghosts of John Wayne Gacy on Halloween. We can't wait. That's the latest slogan from Obamasiah. Winning the future, yes we can, change you can believe in, all fantastic. The latest single is We Can't Wait. White House Hope's latest slogan catches on. That's from the Los Angeles Times. Our other couple of Obamasiah-related notes. The birthers eat their own, targeting GOP Senator Marco Rubio of Florida and perhaps also Bobby Jindal. And from TheHill.com, NPR host steps aside to avoid conflict of interest with the Obama campaign. Never let your foundation funding show. Never let your marketing show. Never let your greased palm connected limousine liberal fake left gatekeeper hangouts show. We're blasting through the 1027 news purge. The show goes on, and we reach Oregon oddities with the story on my Twitter account, at Media Monarchy, hashtag Occupy Portland, attracting mentally ill and street kids.
Organizers of Occupy Portland are noticing an increase in the number of mentally ill people that are coming down to the parks. Mike Turner gets the story from a member of the group.
Gina Ronning is with the Peace and Safety Team of Occupy Portland. She says there's good reason why those with mental health problems tend to gravitate toward the group.
They're able to participate and engage in any of our community activities. There's medical help if they need immediate medical
attention. There's extra clothing, and we have blankets.
Ronnie says there's also the people that occupy Portland.
You know, these are people who are shoved from one street to another street to another street, and they're the undesirables of society, and they're coming there and feeling like they have a sense of dignity and humanity, which they haven't had in a long time.
Ronnie says they put out the call for mental health experts to deal with the problem. So far, they've had no help from the Portland Police Bureau's Project Respond Mental Health Unit. Mike Turner, FM News 101 KXL.
Meanwhile, we see other crackdowns in all other Occupy-related cities. So this is, I think, kind of a disturbing development because we do, unfortunately, have a lot of homeless and a lot of mentally ill and otherwise in Portland, Oregon. Our other Oregon oddity comes from the Washington Post and Associated Press Wire report. One dead after two planes crash near an Oregon state park. And we move, still kind of related to hashtag Occupy, to our police state updates. Occupy Wall Street protesters find city's patients wearing thin. That's from USA Today and from the Daily Mail. I mooned the Queen. Australian protester charged after flashing the monarch while she waved. And from the Daily Mail, new streetlights to have Department of Homeland Security apps, including speakers, video surveillance, and emergency alerts. And it's really called fascism on the IntelliStreets.
IntelliStreets energy management system creates the most flexible and longest-lasting LED luminaires available. Flexibly programmed and dimmed with additional thermal monitoring, our systems can extend luminaire life as much as 50% more than current industry standards and save an additional 25% in energy costs. Simply by taking advantage of the nightly needs of your lighting system, you can provide full brightness during peak usage and then later, say when vehicular, parking, or pedestrian traffic is lower, reduce the lighting and energy usage to not only save money, but extend system life. IntelliStreets takes advantage of the existing power supply and in many cases can even reuse your existing poles. You can achieve a fully featured system by simply changing the streetlight. The intelligence of the system resides in a unique dual-band radio system and miniature computer with data storage capacity, essentially quite similar to an iPhone. IntelliStreets processors are in each streetlight and communicate with each other in a mesh format. So even when poles are damaged by vehicles, the system works around the problem. Our luminaires monitor the system energy costs, grid power or off-grid power, and system integrity. Reports can be generated nightly, and internal LED indicators let service techs know what fixture needs tending to, even though the location is logged in the report. IntelliStreets is so smart that it can know where the sun is and turn off one side of the street before the other. The IntelliStreets processors store and analyze data, soundtracks, announcements, commercials, and even video files. IntelliStreets luminaires achieve a breakthrough in urban media design by integrating a patented full-range speaker system, one of many firsts for IntelliStreets. Unique to IntelliStreets is a digital LED banner system. For densely populated, high-profile urban areas, this LED banner system can be a key component to maximizing civic awareness through advertising coming events, road rerouting for parades, and street maintenance. The system links to the Amber Alert Center as well. Advertising for the Central Business District shopkeepers and national brands can create a significant revenue stream. Also available are digital street signs, which are an extremely economic means of achieving timely routing for theater and stadium districts, even assisting in parking lot directions by connecting to a digital parking structure system or via many forms of interfaces available through IntelliStreets. Imagine a seamlessly integrated urban media system that begins with solid energy management and achieves all aspects of public communications. For bus stops, rail stations, people movers, whatever your communication needs are, IntelliStreets is there to make it a reality.
Unlike wired methods where many miles of cable are required to install light, sound, and video control, IntelliStreets is a simple and robust wireless network that requires no underground costs. Perfect not only for urban areas and suburban shopping centers, IntelliStreets is the solution for all college campuses. From game days to parent weekends and for every purpose in between, IntelliStreets provides a 24-hour area-wide solution to communicating with the student population. From wayfinding and bidirectional voice communications to soundtracks and exceptional lighting solutions, IntelliStreets is the world's first and only outdoor media solution. Available in a variety of architectural styles and accompanied by a robust platform of digital wireless solutions, IntelliStreets also enables a myriad of homeland security features. For more information, call your local agent or contact us at info@IntelliStreets.com.
Contact an intelligence agent to bring IntelliStreets to a subdivision sector near you. New streetlights to have DHS apps with speakers, surveillance, and alerts. Our last police state update. FEMA kicks off first regional private sector conference in the Bay Area, and this is a press release from FEMA.gov, and the conference is called What's in It for Me? And that is just one of the massive confluence of drills that we will be discussing next week. But finally, on the 1027 News Purge, the show goes on. We reach West Virginia, where a official convicted in West Virginia mine disaster. Good news from CBS News related to the Montcoal disaster of April of last year. McDowell County deputy arrested on misdemeanor charges. And finally, from the Republic.com, Interior Secretary Salazar recognizes two outdoor attractions in West Virginia, Canaan Valley and the New River Gorge. As I mentioned 2 weeks ago, I believe, before the Bridge Day events in my hometown of Fayetteville, West Virginia, which is where the New River Gorge Bridge is. I told you to take out the West Virginia quarter and you can see it. This ties into something fascinating that is going on that I only know a little bit about, and I've been trying to poke and prod some of the folks that are still over in West Virginia to kind of fill me in on this story. Salazar's connection to the New River Gorge makes a reference to the Boy Scouts' purchase of 10,000 acres right next to the New River Gorge territory, where they will hold their annual national mega jamboree. It has to do with Bechtel buying land in Fayette County connected to the Boy Scouts. And does this have something to do with essentially handing over all our natural resource areas to international organizations? Stay tuned. Before we continue with the final story on MediaMonarchy.com, before we blast off to all the other related sites in the kingdom, we're into hour number two of this fifth anniversary episode, part retrospective, part introspective, part flash forward to the future. It's October 28th, 2011, and my name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com. Hundreds feared dead in Turkey earthquake. As many as 1,000 people were originally reported to be feared dead after a magnitude 7.2 earthquake struck southeastern Turkey on Sunday, resulting in the collapse of 50 buildings in the province of Van. We have reports from The Telegraph and even provided a developing update link for you to just search Turkey earthquake on Google News. But an update from Fox News, the next day, faint hope for survivors as death toll rises in Turkey, and there have been positive stories of people being pulled from the rubble now 5 days later. But then we tie in something from the Intel Hub, and again, it brings us to what we're going to dive into wholeheartedly next week. 7.2 quake strikes Turkey near Elinan alignment date. From the IntelHub.com, a massive magnitude 7.2 earthquake hit eastern Turkey, killing at least 138 with estimates into the thousands. Buildings and massive structures buckled like rag dolls into twisted metal as highways and roads were reduced to pulp in some areas. It is unknown at this time if the Turkish earthquake has anything to do with Elinin or another object coded under Elinin. Entering the Earth orbit on October 20th, 2011, pulling gravitationally on the Earth. The Intel Hub will be covering this issue leading up to the November 9th, 2011 FEMA FCC takeover drill of all airwaves and the major Elinin alignment date. Psychological operation or not. The nationwide presidential emergency alert story we broke for you back in February of this year on NewWorldNextWeek.com. And yes, it's coming very soon on 11-9. Elinin. The connections, the pop culture, the synchro mysticism, the numerology, it's all there. Related updates, Bangkok braces as high tide worsens. Thai floods, thousands flee the worst floods in Thailand in 50 years. More from the Times of India and from Business Week. But as we move over to cyberspacewar.com, my man Alan in Omaha taking lead writing duties at cyberspacewar.com. And as always, a huge thanks to him. We have a cross post related to the Turkey earthquake, Rosat reentry, Elinin, and the 7.2 Turkey earthquake. Huffington Post reports the Rosat, that was one of our latest pieces of space junk returning. Huffington Post reported Rosat re-entered Earth's atmosphere on Sunday somewhere over Southeast Asia. The Intel Hub continuing to cover Comet Elinin up to the 11-9 event when the government takes control of the nation's televisions and radios during a drill. Is the Turkey quake noted as coincidental with Elinin entering Earth's orbital path? Our related updates, again, from the Intel Hub and from space.com. Sky lights up red and green as reports of fireball entering the atmosphere conflict with reports of CMEs, coronal mass ejections, and northern lights. But from space.com, they note that the doomsday comet Elinin is dead. So says NASA, and so says Jack Parsons Laboratory. And again, we see the conflicting mixed messages and mixed emotions. Is it world peace? Or is it imminent destruction? So we take that note from Cyberspace War as we're discussing Biowars and EnviroHealth style events, and we will return to Cyberspace War. But we want to take a moment just to put on the record the situation in Turkey before we move to foodworldorder.com.
Shock, fear, devastation, and grief. For those caught up in this nightmare, it's a cruel cocktail of emotions. Some have lost everything, their homes, their loved ones. Others are unsure who is alive or dead. Fortunately, we have not lost any family, this woman tells our correspondent, but others have lost many relatives. For our friends, the damage has been huge. This is happening now. I hope God does not let it happen again. May God bless our country. Has your home been damaged? Yes, there's too much damage, a huge fracture, it's leaning over. Thousands of tents and blankets, as well as stoves and food, have been distributed to the homeless and those afraid to go home amid ongoing aftershocks. But the extent of the need is enormous in this mainly Kurdish region. Our correspondent says here in Erciş, at the epicenter, people who've lost their homes spent the night in Turkish Red Crescent tents. All aid is gathered here at this point.
Rescue workers in southeastern Turkey are fighting to free people still trapped by a powerful earthquake. More than 260 people are known to have been killed, with more than 1,000 others hurt. But the delicate operation to sift and search through the rubble is ongoing, as hundreds are still missing. Sunday's 7.2 magnitude quake struck the city of Van and the town of Erciş, some 100 kilometers to the north, reducing remote villages to rubble.
One of those involved in the emergency operation told Euronews we'll never know what we'll find. We too are waiting. Rescuers are doing their job, and once the injured have been saved from the rubble, they'll be transported to hospital. When you see all these buildings completely destroyed, all these people suffering, our spirits are low. We're all suffering for them, he says. But there have been some rare moments of relief, like the rescue of this young boy. Our correspondent in Urgish says such discoveries have given hope to the rescuers, even though they're facing a race against time.
Shifting gears somewhat, we now turn to foodworldorder.com, where we begin with a story from the New York Times. Banned in the USA, horse slaughter just moves across borders. The closing of the country's last meat processing plant that slaughtered horses for human consumption was hailed as a victory for equine welfare. But 5 years later, just as many American horses are destined for dinner plates to satisfy the still robust appetites for their meat in Europe and Asia. Now they are carved into tartare de cheval or basashi sashimi in Mexico and Canada. That shift is one of the many unintended consequences of a de facto federal ban on horse slaughter, according to a recent federal government study. As the domestic market for unwanted horse shrinks, more are being neglected and abandoned, and roughly the same number, nearly 140,000 a year, are being killed after a sometimes grueling journey across the border. We do have a link to that PDF report from the General Accounting Office, GAO.gov. Also links to the UPI and foodsafetynews.com. Furthermore, on foodworldorder.com, new news about genetically modified organisms.
It's the Onion Radio News. Genetically modified shrieking broccoli is toned down. This is Doyle Redland reporting. Nearly 2 years after the introduction of a genetically modified shrieking broccoli, consumer demand has resulted in the development of a new, quieter, softly speaking broccoli. The Monsanto Corporation created the new high-fiber vegetable by inserting the genes of West Coast light jazz radio announcer Barry LeMond.
I'm the kind of health-giving cruciferous delicacy you want to have with your dinner again and again and again.
The new broccoli is expected to be on store shelves by the end of the month and will be displayed separately from its shrieking cousin, which will remain in stores as a courtesy to the hard of hearing. Doyle Redland for the Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
But seriously, folks, from naturalnews.com, soda consumption linked to teen violence. A new study with a link to the abstract from injuryprevention.bmj.com. A new study has found that teenagers who consume high amounts of sugary soda appear to be more prone towards violence than teenagers who consume less or no sugary soda. The more soda a teenager consumes, in other words, the more likely he or she is to show violent aggression towards classmates, a significant other, and even family members. More on this story from thecrimson.com and Breitbart. So put down the code red. Steven Tyler says Paraguay food poisoning brought on his shower fall. From the Barf blog, Aerosmith frontman, American Idol judge, and androgynous scarf model, Steven Tyler fell in his shower in a Paraguay hotel, requiring treatment for injuries to his face, including the loss of teeth. Sources connected with Tyler told TMZ that dude was suffering from dehydration caused by a bout of food poisoning. TMZ spoke with the singer's manager, who described Tyler's injuries as minor and said Steven has already been released from the hospital. Posted alongside this story is the photo of Steven Tyler in the Got Milk campaign, which builds strong teeth and bones. Again, from the Barf blog, 42 sick with salmonella in six states, all from Turkish pine nuts. Who doesn't like a pine nut? An excellent addition to sautéed spinach, fresh salad, or a pesto. except when the nuts are carrying salmonella, posing a raw consumption and cross-contamination risk in the kitchen. The U.S. Centers for Disease Creation, Control, announced today it is collaborating with public health and agricultural officials in New York and other states and the FDA to investigate a multi-state outbreak of salmonella infections linked to Turkish pine nuts purchased from bulk bins at Wegmans grocery stores. And we give you a link to their own press release at Wegmans.com. A total of 42 individuals infected with the outbreak strain of salmonella have been reported from six different states. Meanwhile, on the food inflation front, from confectionerynews.com, Wrigley and Kraft opt for smaller gum packs for cash-strapped U.S. consumers. Gum titans Wrigley and Kraft Foods plan to introduce smaller five-piece chewing gum packs at reduced rates to boost U.S. sales and reflect consumer spending trends. More from the Chicago Tribune and MarketWatch. And again, the flashback to our story from March of this year on foodworldorder.com. Food inflation kept hidden in tinier bags. And as you may or may not know, I work at a grocery store and I've seen it over the last few years. If they jack up the price, you're going to notice that. If they shrink the size and the price stays the same, you are not as likely to notice it, unfortunately. Most dentists say you shouldn't chew gum anyway, even when it's under the guise of, oh, it'll brighten and whiten and strengthen your teeth. It's garbage. Finally, on foodworldorder.com from civileats.com, it's raining chemicals as farmers spray pesticides without warning. It starts with a distant, unmistakable whine, like a fly in another room you've been too lazy to swat. As the sound grows, I make sure the dog's inside, then grab the camera and head to this pasture. Planes spraying fungicides have interrupted several quiet weekends on our small farm this summer. Unfortunately, neither the company spraying the chemicals nor our conventionally farming neighbors are required to tell us when they plan to fly over. Don't get me wrong, my neighbors are really good people, though we have different attitudes about farm chemicals. The corn harvest is their livelihood, and the fungicide producers say that protecting it from disease could mean an additional 15 bushels per acre of grain, although this claim is still contested. I think it probably doesn't occur to them to let us know because they're surrounded by these materials all the time. All the time, or rather all the same, I'd like to maintain my choice to keep chemicals off my land and out of my body. And again, that's the interesting question going back to the drug war begins at home. Sometimes you're surrounded by it so much you don't realize how stinky it is. That closes up all our updates on foodworldorder.com as we now log on to cyberspacewar.com. From threat level, for the second time in 2 years, WikiLeaks announced it was suspending publication of secret documents due to financial difficulties.
The founder of WikiLeaks has warned that it may soon have to stop publishing secrets because of a cash crisis. Julian Assange says the outfit is feeling the pinch because of a financial blockade by several U.S. firms.
The blockade has cost the organization tens of millions of dollars in lost donations at a time of unprecedented costs resulting from publishing alliances in over 50 countries with over 90 media and human rights organizations. Our scarce resources now must focus entirely on fighting this unlawful financial blockade.
Visa, PayPal, MasterCard, and others, including the Bank of America, stopped processing donations for WikiLeaks last year after the U.S. government criticized the organization's release of thousands of sensitive diplomatic cables. WikiLeaks has appealed to its supporters to send it money directly to ensure its survival.
WikiLeaks halts publication over cash flow issues, or we could cynically speculate that it's another case of mission accomplished. Their job is done as a cutout for the intentional release of documents leading to the Arab Spring that has fully sprung. Mission accomplished. NASA considering fuel depots in the sky, from the New York Times. By considering a proposal to put filling stations in the sky, NASA is looking to accelerate plans to send astronauts to distant destinations. The filling stations, NASA calls them propellant depots, would refuel a spacecraft in orbit before it headed out to the moon, an asteroid, or eventually Mars. Currently, all of the fuel needed for a mission is carried up with the rocket, and the weight of the fuel limits the size of the spacecraft. More on the story from myfoxhouston.com as well as thespacereview.com. Gas stations in the sky, essentially. What could possibly go wrong? Furthermore, on cyberspacewar.com, the Mars Hale Crater Civilization, getting into the ESA, the European Space Agency, and an article on MarsAnomalyResearch.com on the Hale Crater Civilization evidence. We reported last week that the Russians want a United Nations moon base. Or was that a United Nations Earth shield? I forget which. But a follow-up on that, Russians want moon cave for lunar base. A cave makes for ready-made dwelling, no digging required. Russians considering a moon cave to house a lunar base. The Japanese Aerospace Exploration Agency, JAXA, released a photo taken by their lunar orbiter as reported by DailyGalaxy.com. In 2009, lunar orbiter Kaguya spotted a big hole in the moon, 65 meters across and at least 80 meters deep, shown posted on cyberspacewar.com, and potentially part of a much larger lava tube. The prospect of a porous moon makes it a more interesting destination as caves provide shelter from radiation and meteors. And speaking of Mars, is the Martian sky blue? The BBC, the True Mars Sky, and again, the Mars Anomalies Research website gets into Cornell Professor Steve Squires and those monitors behind him showing a blue sky on Mars, which was the title of a Matthew Sweet album, I believe. Finally, on Cyberspace War, another story that will cross-post to our next site in the kingdom. It's all a rich tapestry, my friends. Google cracks the unbreakable code of the 1866 Secret Society manuscript. From the Daily Mail, the Copiale cipher, that's C-O-P-I-A-L-E, and if I'm mispronouncing anything, as always, I apologize. The Copiale cipher is a 105-page coded document found in an East German archive and dated to 1866, but the code used to shield its mysteries has remained unbroken. Until now. The international team that cracked the cipher this year found that automated translation techniques, familiar to most of us from the often wonky Google Translate, can help to crack encrypted documents by guessing their contents. It works even when they use a cipher as baffling as the Copiale's 90 symbols and the original language is unknown. The team, led by computer scientist Kevin Knight of USC, aims to use their technique on other encrypted texts. Their work also unearthed a fascinating document that may shed light on the secret societies of the 19th century. The Copiale cipher proved to be about induction into a secret society, speaking of, quote, secret teachings for apprentices, end quote, and a bizarre initiation rite for disciples. So when we get the flip side of this on holyhexes.com, we'll see how revolutionary tools cracked a 1700s code, but our related updates as this does concern Don't Be Evil Google. The good Google giveth and the good Google taketh away. Feds order YouTube remove videos for government criticism. U.S. authorities hitting Google with a 70% rise in takedown orders. More on this story from Paul Joseph Watson. But as we transition to holyhexes.com for the continuation of this story, how revolutionary tools cracked a 1700s code. Again, it's a fascinating display of disclosure on some level. So Google can't let us see videos of protest or government criticism, but they can display the Dead Sea Scrolls and they can show us centuries-old manuscripts relating to secret societies and bizarre occult initiation rites. It's been more than six decades since Warren Weaver, a pioneer in automated language translation, suggested applying code-breaking techniques to the challenge of interpreting a foreign language. That insight led to a generation of statistics-based language programs like Google Translate, and not so incidentally, to new tools for breaking codes that go back to the Middle Ages. Now a team of Swedish and American linguists has applied statistics-based translation techniques to crack one of the most stubborn of codes, the Kopial Cipher, a hand-lettered 105-page manuscript that appears to date from the late 18th century. They described their work at a meeting of the Association of Computational Linguistics in Portland, Oregon. Reported by our own Oregonian back in June of this year, with a link, of course, provided for you. But continuing, discovered in an academic archive in the former East Germany, the elaborately bound volume of gold and green brocade paper holds 75,000 characters, a perplexing mix of mysterious symbols and Roman letters. The name comes from one of only two non-coded inscriptions in the document. The aforementioned Kevin Knight, a computer scientist at the Information Sciences Institute at the University of Southern California, collaborated with Beata Megyesi and Christian Schaefer of Uppsala University in Sweden to decipher the first 16 pages. They turn out to be about a detailed description of a ritual from a secret society that apparently had a fascination with eye surgery and ophthalmology. The complete translation can be found with our PDF link for you, my friends. And again, that story describing their work with another PDF for you at the meeting that was held in the People's Republic of Oregon this past June. Continuing on HolyHexes.com from the Associated Press, Prince Charles cites Vlad the Impaler as an ancestor. The truth is out. Prince Charles is related to Vlad the Impaler. The heir to the British throne says he is related to Vlad the Impaler, the cruel 15th century Romanian warlord who helped inspire Bram Stoker's 1897 vampire novel Dracula. Prince Charles makes the comments on an upcoming TV show to promote his interest in protecting the forests of Romania's Transylvania region. More on this story from the Daily Mail and more about Vlad the Impaler from Wikipedia. And it's another case of our quote-unquote elites being a part of interlocking multi-generational serial killer families. I think I've mentioned so many times on this show that, on the one hand, I've mapped it all out and I know exactly what we're going to go over and how it's all going to lead. But on the other hand, as we're creating things and as I'm collating to basically put together this show, I then start to see the things I hadn't seen when I was just covering it as news. You start to see the connections of, hey, that's in Portland. Or, hey, that's in my home state of West Virginia, as in this case. Swami Bhaktipada, ex-Hare Krishna leader, dies at the age of 74, the story from the New York Times. Swami Bhaktipada, that's Bhaktipada. Swami Bhaktipada, a former leader of the American Hare Krishna movement who built a sprawling golden paradise for his followers in the hills of Appalachia, but who later pleaded guilty to federal racketeering charges that included conspiracy to commit the murders for hire of two devotees, died on Monday in a hospital near Mumbai, India. He was 74, and the cause was kidney failure, his brother Gerald Ham said. Mr. Bhaktipada, who was released from prison in 2004 after serving 8 years of a 12-year sentence, moved to India in 2008. The son of a Baptist preacher, Mr. Bhaktipada was one of the first Hare Krishna disciples in the United States. He founded, in 1968, what became the largest Hare Krishna community in the country and presided over it until 1994, despite having been excommunicated by the movement's governing body. The community he built, New Vrindaban, V-R-I-N-D-A-B-A-N, New Vrindaban, is nestled in the hills near Moundsville, West Virginia, about 70 miles southwest of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Its conspicuous centerpiece is the Palace of Gold, palaceofgold.com, an Eastern-inspired riot of gold-leaf domes, stained glass windows, crystal chandeliers, mirrored ceilings, inlaid marble floors, sweeping murals, silk brocade hangings, there's that word again, carved teak pillars, and ornate statuary. New Vrindaban eventually comprised more than 4,000 acres, a spiritual Disneyland. for a remote spiritual Disneyland in the West Virginia hills. The Hare Krishnas build a palace, from Time Magazine, September 15th, 1980. A spiritual Disneyland, its leaders often called it, with a live elephant, terraced gardens, a swan boat, and bubbling fountains. A major tourist attraction, it drew hundreds of thousands of visitors in its heyday in the early 80s, and substantial annual revenue from ticket sales. The Baroque frenzy of the place and palace stands in vivid contrast to the founding tenets of the Hare Krishna movement. You can get more on this story from the Los Angeles Times from 1988. Again, the aforementioned 1980 article from Time. You can see the brochure of palaceofgold.com. New Vrindavan has its own Wikipedia entry, as, of course, Hare Krishna and Swami Bhaktipada. But it's interesting to note that this was at Moundsville. Among so many other things, Moundsville is featured in the fantastic Robert Mitchum film Night of the Hunter, because it's where the former West Virginia penitentiary was. Moundsville, the prison. Why do you call it Moundsville? Because it's filled with Indian burial mounds. And the central thesis of Peter Lavenda's Sinister Forces is that America is a haunted house. And we have built our prisons and our religious institutions and our military institutions on Indian burial grounds. So when I see these connections going to my home state, I can't help but pay attention. Continuing on HolyHexes.com, we reached the final story that we covered on the latest New World Next Week episode. Vatican calls for new global financial authority amid the economic crisis. And we get the original piece from the Belief blog on CNN, but we also have related supplemental pieces from Reuters, from The Guardian, from News.va, from IndCatholicNews.com, and CatholicNews.com. But we also take it from Kurt Nimmo on Infowars.com. The Vatican has called for a global public authority and a world central bank to rule over financial affairs in the wake of the engineered economic collapse. A document released by the Vatican's Justice and Peace Department should be music to the ears of the Occupy Wall Street demonstrators and similar movements around the world who have protested against the economic downturn. This, according to CNBC. Because as the Belief blog notes, some progressives embraced the Vatican's call, arguing that it sounded many of the same themes as the Occupy Wall Street movement. What are the odds of that, my friends? Furthermore, on HolyHexes.com, the deep occult symbolism of the dog star Sirius. There exists a mysterious relationship between humanity and the star Sirius. Secret Arcana, which we referenced a couple of weeks ago as a sister site to VigilantCitizen.com, explores the deep occult symbolism in the article, The Mysterious Connection Between Sirius and Human History. We also have a Gothamist interview with Mitch Horowitz, who is the editor-in-chief of Tarcher and the mind-body-spirit publisher of the Penguin Group with under the Penguin banner. But he's also the author of Occult America, White House Seances, Ouija Circles, Masons, and the Secret Mystic History of Our Nation. And we post up a brief exchange in Mitch Horowitz's interview with The Gothamist getting into New York City's mystic history. And I believe that echoes what I just referenced before about my home state of West Virginia. If there are some sinister forces in West Virginia, you better believe there are sinister forces in the Empire State. But again, my friends, it's October 28th now. We are entering into this dark weekend. And on all of these levels, I believe Corbett says it on New World Next Week, you may not believe in any of this stuff. But again, there are millions and billions of people who do, and they're going to affect our lives, and that's why we need to get together. I guess we just have to figure out whose revelation we're going to incite. looking for horror experts this Halloween, look no further than the University of Buffalo from buffalo.edu. Why we create monsters. Experts in various aspects of the macabre include several University of Buffalo faculty members who specialize in what many cultures find horrible and terrifying. The UB faculty specializations range from satanic practice, black magic, and cultural monstrosities like serial killers, to real and imagined vampires and zombies, as well as the bizarre Spanish Gothic period in which our fascination with the utterly horrible is grounded. One expert includes greedy bankers and environmentally destructive corporations among the monsters of our time. All of these experts, described further in this piece from buffalo.edu, all of these experts can discuss not only what frightens us, but how and why we create monsters to help us cope with cultural anxiety. Again, referencing and echoing what I noted about post-9/11 paranoia and zombies. The article quotes vampire scholar John Edgar Browning, "Vampires and monsters, they're just us. They're what we aspire to be, what we're told to hate most about ourselves, what we secretly yearn for, but shouldn't."
My name is John Edgar Browning, and I'm a doctoral student in American Studies at the University of Buffalo. My research strengths are Dracula and vampires and monsters, and how those figures relate in popular culture and how they speak to us. Vampires, or figures we would recognize today as vampires, have existed in many different cultures from one end of the planet to the other since time immemorial. They've enjoyed many names: the Romanian Strigoi, the Greek Vrakolakas, the Chinese Changshi, the Filipino Aswang. In every case, though, it's almost always the same. They evoke great fear. They live off the blood or vital essence of others, and they don't die very easily. However, studying the vampire of a particular legend, of a particular place, at a particular time, can tell us much about that particular culture. For these cultures, the figure of the vampire enabled them to make sense of and cope with things they really didn't understand. Well, the vampires we know today in popular entertainment function more or less in the same way. Only now, they serve more or less as political billboards that can be torn down and sort of repapered at a moment's demand. Among other things, vampires can tell us metaphorically who to go and who not to go to bed with, who the dominant groups in society are and who the inferior ones are. Take Dracula, for example. Whoever he resembled and whomever he took as a victim in the 1930s has changed with each consecutive decade. The more we understand Dracula, the better we can understand ourselves. Vampires, monsters, they're just us. What we aspire to be, what we're told to hate most about ourselves, what we secretly yearn for but shouldn't. Vampires are the archaeologist's digging site, the geologist's multi-layered rock face, the crime scene investigator's murder weapon. To paraphrase a famous scholar, monsters in general and vampires in particular are pure culture. The vampire's body is really just a cultural body.
Why we create monsters. Something definitely to think about this occult holiday weekend, my friends, as again we see so many things going on within and without ourselves. And that essentially covers everything posted to Media Monarchy, Food World Order, Cyberspace War, and Holy Hexes. If you find independent, alternative media valuable and enriching, and that's the question you should ask about anything you consume on a media level, is it junk food? Is it good for you? Is it a brief indulgence? Or does it enrich your life? And it can be all those things. And again, I'm never going to be the guy putting myself up on some pedestal like I've got it all figured out and I've got it all perfect. Like, I didn't stream some episodes of The Wonder Years last night because they're all on Netflix. I do that because I'm like you. I'm a person, and we still like stories, and that's ultimately why we like film and the arts and media, is we're all trying to tell each other stories. We're trying to tell our own stories. I'm trying to hear your story. We're trying to put them together and figure out how they go together in the book and how we can learn from that book and learn our way forwards. So, my friends, as we referenced, Streaming the Wonder Years, and again, this is wrapping up our fifth anniversary episode. We began this show on the Portland Radio Authority October 27th, 2006, and here it is, October 28th, 2011, and we are still going strong. I'm going to blast through some of the related things on our awesome Twitter feeds, but as long as I've brought up the anniversary, the 5 years, our Wonder Years, if you will, I thought kind of seriously about ending this PRA live show on this very anniversary episode, and I thought about it kind of all summer and all fall. But I'm not going to do it. However, it may still happen in the not-too-distant future. I love the PRA folks, Mike, Saffron, and of course, as we referenced in that first bit, Jeff, who got us started here 5 years ago and has since gone on to launch his own fantastic, amazing Radio23.org. I still like the ritual of going somewhere at a certain time in a certain place to go perform a certain function, whether that's, you know, like I've said, I've come from radio and theater. At a certain time, the curtain goes up. At a certain time, your show is on. I like that ritual of having to be there on time, and you're on, and you kind of kick on. You know, I turn my hat around backwards, and I'm like a machine. Ultimately, guys, you know what I really want? I want to just have my own 24/7 streaming internet station that I can run from home, that I can put in all my amazing music and media collections, as well as the podcast that I love and always play the latest, Corbett Report or Ground Zero or Red Ice Radio or Peace Revolution or any of those kind of shows, my own music, but then also be able to cut in a moment's notice and perform Media Monarchy, news updates, videos, mixtapes, B-sides, interviews, and any of those things. That's the dream. I want, when you go to MediaMonarchy.com, first thing you see to be a button that says listen or watch live or both. That's the dream. So let's see if we can make that happen sometime in the next 5 years. And again, I'll remind you, the donate button on the top right of MediaMonarchy.com if you find independent alternative media valuable. And again, you may not be listening to this as the podcast you got from me in my archive. You may be listening to this on Revere Radio. You may be listening to this on Zero Point Radio. Whatever outlet you're getting this from, and again, a huge welcome to everyone out there, wherever, whenever you are in the world. Please support what supports you. So I think I've disclosed that for you. We are thinking about moving it and stepping up our game and being able to do this show from home. We're just going to have to work towards that. So, nothing firm. This show will be live Friday mornings, 10 a.m. Pacific time, as it has been. And even perhaps when we transition to some new form, perhaps it'll still fill that time. Perhaps it won't. We may change entirely. I don't know. That's the benefit, and that's kind of what I've always enjoyed about being a one-man band. Is I can be my own little workhorse, and be picky about the things I like to be picky and perfectionist about. But I'm digressing, and there's no way I can encapsulate all my feelings about these past 5 years and what it all means to me and what you guys mean to me in informing all of this. So let's just look at Navigate Netflix on Twitter for a few recent notes of Netflix woes. And the production of the forthcoming amazing Ultimate History Lesson from TragedyAndHope.com, as well as all the amazing work from Paul Verge at Divergent Films, has postponed any new episodes of Navigating Netflix at NavigatingNetflix.com, but needless to say, it's not going to go away, and the site will still continue to focus on new amazing media that you can get not only through Netflix, however you get your media. Navigating Netflix is just a clever, alliterative name that I love and took and ran with from the TragedyAndHope.com community. But over on twitter.com/pumpupthevolume, it is the music Twitter feed, and we also import the feeds from a couple of Song of the Day podcasts that I really enjoy that, again, I'm not the music director at a college radio station anymore, so I have to try a lot harder to try and stay halfway hip. But you can get recent songs of the day from bands like I Am Dynamite and Crooked Fingers and Album Leaf and VHS or Beta, or hear the first new Mazzy Star songs in 15 years, or the brand new Surfer Blood EP, and I've tweeted some photos of my own deluxe vinyl edition. All that and so much more on twitter.com/pumpupthevolume, again, as we're trying to put more and more media into the monarchy. Our own Twitter feed, at Media Monarchy, has so many things going on it now. I have it auto-import stories from the Cult News Network, as well as the Daily Onion Radio News podcast, as well as news from the Deutsche Press Agency, and all the other sites feed into this one main feed. Holy Hex's Food World Order, Cyberspace War, it all goes there, and it's all linked and cross-referenced and hopefully really simple and easy to navigate and find everything. There's no way I'm going to be able to blast through all the tweet feed action on Food World Order, but the one thing I do want to focus on quickly as we begin to wrap this show up with a few little treats still yet up our sleeve. Tricks and treats. I retweeted four in a row, one from the Multnomah County Emergency Management, that is Multnomah County, Oregon, where Portland, Oregon is, from the Portland BEM and National EAS News and Katran 7660. This concerns all of them. The EAS test, the Emergency Alert System, the nationwide presidential emergency alert system taking over radios and televisions nationwide on 11/9. We're going to focus on this next week, as well as the remix of the War of the Worlds anniversary. Again, so many things swirling all around us, my friends. In listening to my man Clyde Lewis on KXL, I've noticed from them they have been running very quietly, very quickly, a spot announcing the drill.
On November 9th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, your regularly scheduled programming on this and all other networks will be interrupted with a short nationwide test of the emergency alert system. This will only be a test.
FEMA and FCC conducting first nationwide EAS test with the emergency alert system November 9th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. State tests usually last 2 minutes. It's been reported that this nationwide test is going to last 3 minutes and 30 seconds. Always watch the numbers. It's all in the numbers, my friends. As we glance right back at Google News one last time, we see, of course, Game 7 is very important. And the 999 plan, and the We Are the 99%. Home team holds upper hand in Game 7. Do Obama's big donors break his no-lobbyist pledge? ICC prosecutors in direct talks with Gaddafi's son. West Virginia accepts Big 12's invitation Turkey to introduce redevelopment law. And Samsung passes Apple in smartphone shipments. That and so much more swirling around the pop culture world, my friends. This has been episode 237, the fifth anniversary episode, October 28th, 2011. I love you guys, and I appreciate it so very much. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. And we do have one treat that we're going to go out on, and I want to just make a couple quick references as I look at my last little notes that I want to hit. Wasn't it interesting that Snoop Dogg's talking about blowing up heads, and you're going to see when Mixtape 13 drops, my friends, on Halloween, what happens with Silver Shamrock and exploding heads. And again, the EAS test on November 9th, War of the Worlds remix, and going off the grid in Taos, New Mexico, all that and so very much more, my friends. As always, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care, and thank you.
Spaces, what are we living for? Abandoned places, I guess we know the score. On and on. another hero, another mindless crime behind the curtain in the pantomime. Hold the line. Does anybody want to take it anymore? Show me.
That's going to about do it for this maiden voyage of Media Monarchy. Now, once again, I keep hammering it in. You can go to mediamonarchy.blogspot.com for all these stories and tons more. Now, I'm not pimping the website for any kind of personal gain. There's no ads. I don't get any money. None of this is for money. This is for you to get informed. Stop being so naive. I hope that each week I can help you and help myself become more informed on all these things going on. So once again, I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank the Portland Radio Authority for letting me do this. And I'm going to be here every Friday from 10 to noon with Media Monarchy. My name's James, saying thanks and take care.
cooperated, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.